Well, good morning again. Still good to see everybody here this morning. As I was thinking about this past year, and I guess I hope you all had a good Christmas and have a happy new year. I think my favorite thing about this year was probably also my not so favorite thing. I think when I started having heart issues, I got to see so much from this church family. I seen people rallying my spirits all while the church work still went about its business as it should. It was so uplifting and very humbling when someone would say, I prayed for you today. You know, we should make more of a habit of doing that for people and not being embarrassed of telling them that we've prayed for them. I can't really express how much that meant to me to know that I was in somebody's thoughts and prayers. I think about that just about all the time, that about this church praying for me. And when I think ahead of what's coming this next year and the following years, I think good things are on the horizon. And I want to thank all of you. And if I haven't told you or if I haven't said it enough again, thank you for being the church family that you are and for letting God to continue to use you. Now, back in April, I got to fly on an airplane and they let you watch stuff on your phone if you want to, if you have enough Southwest points. And I did have enough Southwest points to watch one show. And I watched a genealogy show where it was, and I can't tell you even the celebrity that it was, but he was tracing back his genealogy. And they did this in such a way that they would find out where they came from, and they would even go back to where they came from. And that just gets you to thinking about how popular that has become. We like to do Ancestry.com or 23andMe. We like the idea of finding out or tracing our heritage. Where did we come from? Who were my people? Where did my family originate from? And I think we especially love the stories. Like if we had a war hero in our past or somebody that has done some great thing. Or even if we find out that our great, 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 great grandpa maybe done something he shouldn't have, we can still feel shame today. We feel that connection. Or maybe you don't. maybe you don't care about your family tree or where you come from, and I hope that's not the case. And you may be hoping I don't preach a whole sermon about it. But really, whether you care or not, our family history affects us. Where we came from, our heritage affects us presently. And let's just think through some of the things that our family tree and our family tree that affect our reality today. Number one's going to be physically. We are affected physically by our parents, by our grandparents or great-grandparents. What you look like is affected by your family. My hairline, as it continues to recede, how far it will go, how much I will lose, that's all part of my parents, grandparents, great-grandparents. Those sorts of things. Maybe we can say, most importantly, is culturally. None of us come into this world alone. We've all been shaped by somebody, whether you were the family you were born into or maybe it was the family that raised you. Someone shaped you. How you speak, what's important to you, how you dress, your worldview and perspective, and your perception of things. Not only were you shaped by someone, but they were shaped by someone who, guess what, was shaped by someone. Our heritage, our genealogy, our family tree, it affects us whether we care about it or not. Maybe we could even say financially, maybe you stand to inherit or have inherited a large sum of money. That's probably not the case. I was going to ask Mom, but Mom was having some issues with her eyes, so she had to cut out early this morning. So forgot to announce her, add her to your prayers too as we deal with her eyes and that. So I don't stand financially from my family tree for anything. Except good looks, right? But for the sake of this lesson, I want you to imagine that my family owns some mineral rights on some land where if money ever came from, my family and cousins would get a lot of money. So let's say then thousands of dollars start rolling in and we had all this money. Now I think my sisters and I and our kids would love each other enough that we would want to make sure that everybody had their fair share. I guess it depends on whose name's on the deed, maybe. But we would make sure that, every cousin, every family member got what was theirs. But it would also, but let's just say some of you all came. We would want to make sure that you were really related, wouldn't we, before we started handing out money. We would want to make sure that everybody who stood to get something got something, and nobody who wasn't supposed to didn't. That's how inheritance works, right? If we're going to understand the Bible, and specifically the New Testament, then we have to understand that that is part of it. The idea of Israel being a family and expecting an inheritance. The Jews believed that, and Jesus confirmed, that this is when a person died, that the spirit went to a spiritual realm where they were protected by God. Now, Jesus called it Abraham's bosom. But they also believed that a day would come when there would be a resurrection and the nation of Israel would inherit a new world. And they called that the world to come. A world where evil was eradicated, a world in which righteousness dwelled. The Mishnah is a commentary on the Bible, or at least the Old Testaments and the rabbi teachings, and it says this. It says all Israel will share in the world to come. Now, I read that because it's very similar to what Paul says in Romans 11:26 when he says, and in this way, all Israel will be saved. They believed that that was their inheritance. But just because they believed that all of Israel would share into the world to come, that didn't really mean they believed that every individual Jew or Israelite would share in the world to come. And there are many of them. If we keep reading the Mishnah, they say that, well, that guy's not going to get in, and these people aren't going to get in, or this king isn't going to get in, or this group of people is not going to get in. If you do this or you do that, you're not going to get in. So it's a pretty specific group. It's not necessarily all Israel will be saved for them. They were disinherited, I think, because when we get to Romans, that's where we're at in Romans. There are some Israelites that have been disinherited. You might sum it up this way, that Paul's claim, and it was a radical claim when it came to Jews and Gentiles, that it sometimes put them at odds with one another. Paul's claim was that everyone who shares in the faith of Abraham will inherit the promises of Abraham. Everyone that has Abraham's faith will, because of what Jesus has done on the cross, share in the inheritance of Abraham. Now back to my oil illustration. If you are a family member, and all of a sudden somebody starts talking about how you can be part of the family, and you can be part of the family if you do this, I promise you, somebody is going to stand up and say, whoa, hang on just a second, I'm family. They're not really our family. Who do they think they are, claiming our inheritance? It's easy for Jews, both Christian and non-Christian, and those who are opposed to Christ, resent the claims of these Gentiles who weren't circumcised or keeping the law to claim to be heirs of Abraham. If that's true, then it's also possible for Gentiles to get anti-Semitic, because the greatest enemy of the first century was that. It wasn't the Roman Empire. That would come later. Biggest threat to the church at this time are the Jews. And it's very easy for a Gentile Christian to be angry or bitter or resentful and say, hey, God cut you off. If you are ethnically Jewish, God is done with you because you rejected Jesus. Paul's claim was that, no, God hasn't rejected any ethnicity. No matter where you came from or who your people are or what you've done, if you've become a follower of Jesus, Jew or Gentile, if you share in the faith of Abraham because of what Jesus did, you are heirs according to the promises made to Abraham. As we work through what Paul says here in Romans 11, and it's my favorite metaphor in the Bible, and the Bible's got a bunch, but this one's my favorite. I think if we let this all set in, we can come to have three things instill in us. And I think the number one thing is gratitude, number two is humility, and number three is a connection. I think as we use this metaphor, I hope we let it develop within us this sense of gratitude, humility, and a profound sense of connection. In Romans 11, verse 17, Paul says, "But if some of the branches were cut off, and you," and he's talking to the Gentile Christians specifically here, and that's us, right? He says, "And you, although a wild olive shoot, were grafted in among the others, and now share in the nourishing root of the olive tree." Paul's metaphor, of course, is saying that Israel is like this lone olive tree. There are other trees around, but this is the holy tree. And the roots go all the way down to Abraham, and they are holy. And so it grows, and the branches are also holy. Israel is a holy people, but individual Israelites, people that are ethnically Jewish but have decided to reject Jesus, like are the branches of that holy tree that have been broken off. Family members that are cut off from the family tree, they are disinherited. And so it's as if this beautiful tree is grown, and all around the bottom of the branches, again, individual Israelites who have rejected Jesus have been broken off, and they are no longer part of the family tree of Israel. That's what Paul is claiming. Then he says about the Gentiles. He says, "You are like grafted in branch," and I'm sure this room is full of horticulturists and could come up here and explain exactly how this grafting works. But it's amazing to me that something could be cut off of one plant and then joined to another. And then I guess with a totally different tree, in such a way that it would begin to grow together and become part of the same plant. And so the root that nourishes the tree also nourishes in this grafted branch, as if they had always been together. And Paul says, as Gentiles, that's what you are. And this is a beautiful, again, a beautiful holy tree of Israel. And those ethnically Jews that have rejected Christ, they are disinherited from the family. They're cut off and their branches are strewn on the ground. But you're taken as this new branch. You've been cut off from some wild tree and you have been merged together with this olive tree, so that this becomes your story, your heritage, your family tree, and your promises. You weren't born into this family, but you were born again into this family. You were grafted into this family tree, and if that doesn't instill a profound sense of gratitude in you, then I don't know that I can ever say anything that will. To say God wants you to be part of His family, to be part of that commitment that He made to His people, is very humbling. All of the things this month that we've been talking about how God is so radically committed to Israel, committed to us, and how profoundly committed He is to them, and how He loves them and wrestles with them in spite of their sins, God says, "I want you." No matter where you came from, no matter who you are, no matter what you are ethnically, no matter who you are personally, or the things that you may or may not have done, no matter who you are, God says, "I want you. I want to graft you into this tree," so that His commitment is His commitment also to us. That is something out of which we should live our entire lives, so that there's this profound sense of gratitude to say, "Thank you, God, that you have brought me into this family and made me an heir to the promises that you made," because these promises are not based on our goodness, but are based on how God, because we share in the nourishing root of God's tree. And now that root that nourished the Jews for so long now nourishes us as Christians. Verse 18, Paul, still talking to the Gentile Christians, says, "Do not be arrogant toward the branches. If you are, remember it is not you who supported the root, but the root that supports you." Again, just get in your head that word picture of that olive tree and all these grafted branches into this gnarly tree, and then somewhere towards the bottom are these natural branches that have been broken off. And it might be tempting for the grafted branches to kind of laugh and say, "I got a spot and you don't." It's easy for them or us sometimes to be arrogant to those who are no longer part of the family tree. And Paul says, don't dare allow that kind of pride and arrogance to creep into your thinking. Remember, it's not you that supports the root, it's the root that supports you. God's not lucky to have us. We are so lucky to be incredibly blessed by him. Verse 19 says, then you will say, branches were broken off so that I might be grafted in. That is true. They were broken off because of their unbelief. But you stand fast through faith, so do not become proud, but fear. For if God did not spare the natural branches, neither will he spare you. And here is a true statement. We see not only in the text, but in our personal lives and in our history books, that pride leads to mistreating other people. Isn't that true? Pride leads to mistreating people. If you think you deserve a seat at the table, if you think you deserve God's favor, if you think you deserve everything you have, it will inevitably lead to you mistreating someone else. In this case, Paul's concern are those who are ethnically Gentile, who are now heirs to the family blessings of Abraham, that it might lead them to looking down and resenting and mistreating those who are ethnically Jews. We've seen that throughout history, both that example and other ethnicities and groups. People mistreating other people because they think they are better, either because of something they've done or the color of the skin or who their people have been or what country they came from. But pride always leads to mistreating other people. Our grafted in status, that idea, you don't deserve to be part of the family story, but we are. We are part of the family story, and it's because of the grace of God. And it ought to lead us to a profound sense of humility. People ask me how you are, and I say better than I deserve. And I stole that from Ardell Porter, who I'm pretty sure stole that from Dave Ramsey on the radio. But there's multiple layers where that's true, isn't it? I am better than I deserve. All of us are better than we deserve. I don't deserve to be part of this story, but I am, because God is a radically committed God, and he was committed to saving Israel, not just those who were ethnically Jews, but those people, but taking people from every nation and grafting us into this remarkable family tree. We live our lives not only with a sense of gratitude, but also with a sense of humility, knowing, again, that pride leads to mistreating people. And Paul knew if the Jews thought they were better than the Gentiles, it would lead to them being mistreated, and vice versa would be true as well. Paul, in essence, is saying, listen to us. Listen, this wasn't your seat. It belonged to somebody else. And imagine being at a family reunion and there's a large table and you aren't really part of this family, and some guy named Jim was kicked out of that, and they say, that's your seat. Jim's name is still sitting there in front of the seat, but it's ours. That was somebody else's seat, and here I sit, and I don't deserve to be sitting here, but I am, because of what Jesus has done for the whole world. Verse 22 says, note then the kindness and the severity of God. Severity towards those who have fallen, but God's kindness to you. Provided you continue in his kindness, otherwise you too will be cut off. And even if they have broken branches, even if they do not continue in their unbelief, will be grafted in. For God has the power to graft them in again. This is kind of a side note, but there are a lot of people that believe that the Bible teaches that once you become a follower of Jesus, that you can never be cut off. And that's exactly the opposite of what Paul is saying here. He's saying if you look at these branches that have been cut off, it should remind you that if they've been cut off, surely you too can be cut off of it. You've been grafted into this tree. Our grafted status and the humility that comes with it comes with the understanding that if I don't continue in the kindness of God, that I can be disinherited. But in the same respect, those that have been cut off can be grafted back in if they don't continue in their unbelief. Anyone who will make Jesus their king and follow him, be reborn into this family, his family, either Jew or Gentile, no matter what, you can be grafted back in. Verse 24 says, For if you were cut from what by his nature a wild olive tree, and grafted contrary to nature into a cultivated olive tree, how much more will these natural branches be grafted back into their own olive tree? That was Paul's hope. And his hope was that they would be so jealous that the Gentiles were getting this inheritance that they would turn to Jesus and they would believe and God would graft those branches that had been cut off. I'll tell you what it should instill in all of us. It also should instill a sense of connection. And this is the point. The point really isn't, in some ways it is, but in some ways the point isn't your own personal salvation. The point is that God is taking all of us and creating a multi-ethnic, this giant Israel of all of us, this holy cultivated tree that goes all the way back to Abraham, and he's grafting us into the world's most important family tree. That should change the way we feel our connection with each other, because if we are in Jesus, we are all family. No matter what you look like, no matter your color, no matter what your own family tree, your personal family tree looks like, we have this family tree that we are now a part of. It changes our connection with one another. It changes how we treat one another because it changes how we are. It also changes the way we read the Bible. The Bible, when we let this metaphor sink in, the Bible isn't just a book of rules. It's not a dictionary. It's our family history. It's your family story. We spend a lot of energy and money into tracing our family trees, but the Bible is our family tree. It changes how you read every promise in the Bible, how you understand God's commitment. It wasn't just that God committed himself to this group called Israel. It's now that God is still committed to a group called Israel. Not ethnically Jews, but the people who follow Jesus, who have been grafted into the world's most important family tree. It instills with us a sense of gratitude, humility, and connection. And that is where our commitment comes from. Based on the commitment of God and understanding the big picture story of Israel. And it's one where God has grafted you into. And he says, now these are your stories. This is your family. Doesn't that sort of overwhelm you? It sort of overwhelms me to say in response to God's commitment to us that we commit all to him, all the glory to him, to his cause, and to his people, because Israel's God is our God, and God's preparing us to be something great. Every single one of us can respond to this truth, can't we? Whether it's that you're not grafted into the family tree, that you haven't yet been born of the water and of the Spirit, or maybe you've just lost your sense of gratitude or humility or connection and you need that restored. Maybe it's that you know all of this stuff and none of this is new to you. Then go tell somebody else that they don't know that too. That's our job. This morning, if you're not a Christian, or you are, and you need the prayers of this congregation, we urge you to come as together we stand and we sing.